This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and thanks for staying with us. In about 30 minutes, we'll talk about vaccinations for economic frontliners with Edwin Ho, a council member for the Academy of Occupational and Environmental Medicine Malaysia. But in the meantime, let's talk about Pakatan Harapan. Their secretariat has set up 9 committees of its members to study and prepare policies for the coalition that will help it address issues of the day.
The secretariat said via a statement over the weekend that the committees could also include experts in the field or any parties deemed suitable for the committee. Commenting on the current Perikatan National Administration, PH said it does not have the ability to lead the country, highlighting its management of the pandemic, widespread class division, confusing SOPs, and an emergency declaration. Now, in the lineup, former Education Minister Mazli Malik was appointed as the head of the Education Committee, while former Health Minister Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad was appointed as the Health Committee head. The heads of the other committees will be announced later. But the question is, what is the significance of this PH committee? Does it mean that the shadow cabinet is in the works?
So for more on this, we've got on the line with us Dr. Wong Chin Hua, the political scientist at Sanmei University. Good morning, Dr. Wong. Now, what do you think about this latest MCO announcement? And does this secretariat's nomination of this committee amount to a shadow cabinet to perhaps do a better job than the PN government?
Well, for the National MCO announcement, there is a serious flip-flop and also terrible incoordinations where you have the Prime Minister making an announcement just about an hour after the announcement made by the Defence Minister. Why can't they put together? And there's questions about whether an MCO after Raya, would that be the most, has the most optimum effect in controlling the spread? We have to recognize that this is bad timing to be in government. All these difficult decisions may be slammed, but two of the problems seems self-inflicted for the Muhyiddin government. First, is monopartisan decision-making. So when you make difficult decisions without buy-in from different parties, of course, you're inviting attacks. Second is there's no accountability because of the suspensions of the parliaments and so on, and that leads to very rampant phenomena of double standards enforcement, dual dajat. And so about this Pakatan Harapan inter-committee, I think whether or not it can function like a shadow cabinet, it depends, first of all, whether the 9 committees will have coordination between themselves. Without that, the committees can easily contradict each other, mimicking the failure of the Muhyiddin government that they try to outperform.
Why didn't they just go towards creating a shadow cabinet? Why create these inter-party committees as a transition step or so?
You ask the fantastic questions that I have in mind. I do not know why is it that Pakatan Harapan seems to have this fear of having a shadow cabinet. They do not have any problem wanting to be a shadow prime minister, for example. But why should they fear about this? And it comes back perhaps that if you want to be very cynical, let me put it this way. If you're going to have a shadow cabinet, you would need to have shadow cabinet meeting, weekly meetings, so that you discuss about what happened in the country and then you communicate to the public and say, what the government is doing there, this is what we are offering to you. I suspect that some people don't want to have weekly meetings before they get a real job.
Okay, that's an interesting take. Because in the lineup of the committees, there are some very notable names missing. YB Hannah Yeo, Anthony Lok, Lim Guaning. Why are they not included in the committee list?
There are two reasons. One is that the setup of committees follows strictly this rule about three-party equal representations from PKR, DAP, and AMANA. And if you look at the numbers of the MPs, that DAP had 42, PKR 35, AMANA 11, very easily you're going to see an overwhelming dominance of DAP. Doesn't mean that you have to fill in all the 89 PHMP into this. But nevertheless, they will still look prominent. Secondly, I think that PH has always had this trouble of how do you allocate certain key position to senior leaders like Lim Guan Yin. So there's probably an easy way out, but it doesn't solve the problem. How long are you going to avoid all this before you get attacked in the next elections? You know, after elections, you're going to be questioned as well if you get to form the government. For me, one argument put up by Pakatan Harapan that they do not want to have a shadow cabinet is to avoid all this issue before elections. Now, this is wrong, because that if you have the problem coming out now, it's like having a vaccine. You would have the immunity.
So Chin Hua, what do you expect to see from this committee? And how difficult or easy do you think it will be to propose policy measures that are superior to the PN policy or measures?
First of all, I go back to the questions whether this committee would even have regular meetings among themselves, and then the committee chair, would they have a coordinating meeting? That's the shadow cabinet meeting. And of course, you need a shadow prime minister. So that come back to the question, would Anwar play the role as shadow prime minister? If not, would he allow anyone else to preside the meeting? Without this, then the committees would be basically 9 groups of politicians, perhaps issuing more coordinated press statements. They would not go too far, because we look back at the history. Last July 2nd, PKR announced, 3rd July, sorry, PKR announced 19 spokesperson. Nothing happened after that. Going back 12 years ago, July 2nd, 2009, Pakatan announced 25 shadow committees. Nothing happened as well.
Maybe the function of this committee is just to create the GE 50 manifesto.
I would hope so. That come back to say, how do we look at manifesto? Manifesto could mean just a document, a very nice document that win praises from commentators like me. Or it can mean a process where you actually have real negotiations, not between the parties on different social groups on what are the ideas you want to put forward. So everyone do horse trading on policy matters. Now, if it can go that far, it would be fantastic. If it just end out become a manifesto drafting committee, subcommittees and so on, then I'm afraid it probably would not be able to avoid the problems it had with the fantastic Buku Harapan manifesto.
And speaking of GE15, Chin Huan, given the current political environment, do you think PH stands a chance to take back the federal seats? What are the challenges ahead?
I think the next election will almost certainly deliver a hung parliament, meaning that no party would win a simple majority in the House. So the chance of PH taking back government is really coming back and say, will it win enough seats to be the senior partner of a post-election coalitions, or at least a junior partner? If it's too weak, then it probably would just be consigned to remain in the opposition bench. And that come back. Why would people vote for them, and how can they win more seats? It come back to two things. One, can they excite the voters to come out to vote? And yeah. Second, can they avoid multi-corner fights among the oppositions?
I mean, when you talk about the coalition challenges they have, even in setting up the committee, one of the things that are very stark in evidence is the lack of women and youth representation in this coalition and committees. How will we reflect that then to ensure and encourage more women and youth participation then?
Unfortunately, I think that if you're looking at the numbers of MPs and so on, you certainly have more MPs who are women and young who can come forward. But this setup is unnecessarily confined by this idea that every party should have equal representation, and therefore you have to leave a lot of people out. But the larger question here is that out of the 9 committees, putting aside the mobilization, you have only education, health, economy, securities, gender, youth, cost of living and law. What about things like environment, religions and unity, transportation, public works, East Malaysian affair? We are not seeing all this. We need something more than just to show unity. Ultimately, I think politicians are overly concerned with positions, but ordinary people out there want solutions. And solution is what they look for in leadership at a time of pandemic and economic crisis.
Okay, Chin Huat, thanks so much for your time. That was Dr. Wong Chin Huat, the political scientist at Sun Wei University. I think his parting shot was actually very apt. People want policy direction. People want leadership. And unfortunately, the current PM government is not providing either of the above.
And I think the challenge with this PH committee is that because it's artificially restrained itself by party representation, you perhaps won't get the best people to bring the best ideas for each section then.
Okay, we'll come back after this with some discussions on IP rights for COVID vaccines with a person named Dr. Lindsay Newman, Director of Economics and Country Risk for IHS Market. That's happening after the news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.